Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymy Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, what is satanic panic?
Happy Halloween, everyone. Welcome to Just a Minute Spooktacular Halloween episode. So it's our Halloween episode, and before we get started, just a reminder to the parents out there, make sure that you go get your kids Halloween candy and apples x-rayed, because weirdos and creeps put razor blades in those things all the time.
In the arms of an angel.
Millions of children have died from razor blades and poison and Halloween candy this year alone. For just $1 a month, you can help prevent this.
Not.
Yeah, that's not true.
Okay, parents, the good news is that this is one of the many poisoned candy myths. No child has ever been killed by eating Halloween candy from a stranger.
Nope.
Although one dad did kill his own child this way for insurance money. He's known as the Candyman, or the man who killed Halloween, because he was convicted of killing his 8-year-old son in 1974 with a potassium cyanide-laced pixie stick that was supposed to have been collected during trick-or-treating.
Yeah, it's
a terrible story, actually, because he poisoned more pixie sticks and gave them to other kids so he could cover up the crime of trying to kill his children. Anyway.
But, yeah, so that instance has happened, but overall, tainted Halloween candy is what we call an urban legend.
It is.
Yeah. And today we're going to talk about satanic panic, which scholars would refer to as a moral panic.
Yes.
So we have urban legends and moral panics, and there's some similarities, but they are different concepts.
Okay. Tell us, what is the difference between an urban legend and a moral panic?
Yeah. Well, an urban legend is kind of a horrific or a funny story that's circulated as true, kind of like a friend of a friend told me, and there's usually like a mortality, and I intentionally said mortality because
mortality.
It's usually like death,
yeah,
or a cautionary element. So like, be careful, don't do this, or you'll end up dead, or you'll end up maimed. So like the kidneys in the bathtub, like you go home with a stranger and they knock you out, and you wake up in an ice bath and they've removed your kidneys to sell.
I love that one.
Yeah, harvest on the black market. Razor blades in candy is another one. Be careful of candy from strangers or you'll end up eating razor blades.
Yes.
A couple of years ago, there was a big one, the Momo viral meme.
I never heard of this one.
I know you've seen the pictures before. You've seen the pictures of this like Japanese bird woman. It's a sculpture, and that became like the face of Momo. And the idea was like that people, creepy strangers on the internet, were inserting this Momo challenge into like kids' videos on YouTube, and it would like tell them to go do these crazy challenges and kill themselves.
Okay, I did miss this completely.
So, I'm sure if you saw the picture of this, it was like a huge meme. I'm sure you've seen this picture before.
Maybe.
But anyway, there was like never any proof of like original videos with any of these things inserted. It was all just kind of like urban legend.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
So a moral panic, on the other hand, is a sociological concept where, most broadly, some societal problem, either real or fictitious, but always exaggerated, is blamed on a folk devil.
Right.
So there's a social problem that is either artificial, made up, or it's exaggerated. The concern or the panic or the threat is bigger than reality. The folk devil is when deviant outsiders are turned into scapegoats for the social problem.
Yeah.
And panic is spread through the media, and now social media kind of instigating fear and resentment of the folk devil and their dangerous influence. And some examples of this, when we look at, for instance, like drug scares or drug panics throughout, you know, the last 100, 200 years, oftentimes they're tied to like a particular racial or ethnic group. So if you think about like the crack scare, the crack epidemic we had, you know, that kind of tied to like poor black inner city individuals. And there were all of these kind of exaggerations about crack babies and crack mothers and all of this stuff. And now we've got kind of like the LGBTQ grooming kids.
Yes.
Which is a familiar narrative that we will hear even today in our story. But anyway, the difference between an urban legend and a moral panic is really the folk devil aspect.
Okay.
Like, somebody's to blame.
Yes.
With urban legends, they're just untrue stories passed around as kind of cautionary tales, like, don't do this or you'll get in trouble.
Okay.
But moral panics are usually related to a real social problem, but the blame goes to a particular group of people who kind of get labeled as outsiders and labeled as a folk devil.
Yes.
And urban legend tales could be kind of components of larger moral panics, but it's really the identification of that folk devil that's the larger concern.
So on to the satanic panic.
Yeah, satanic panic at the disco. Hey, look, Ma, I made it. I'm panicking about Satan. But anyway, satanic ritual abuse, or SRA, it was a major fear, a major concern in the 80s and 90s. So you had a lot of social context kind of being fertile grounds for this to occur. Most broadly, you had like the notion of stranger danger.
Yeah.
In the 80s, milk carton kids, strangers being kidnapped, danger lurking around the corner. And in conjunction with this, you had the rise of the religious right in the 80s.
Yeah, the kidnapping was always by a van. We mm-hmm. were supposed to be scared mm-hmm. of vans. Mm-hmm. Watch out for vans.
Yeah, and you know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
There were all kinds of like infomercials on TV. I remember seeing these as a kid. Like, if a stranger tries to grab you, yell, "Help, this is not my parent." And I actually just thought, oh, that looks cool or fun, and I tried it out one time. My dad was like taking me out of Food Line, and I just yelled, "Help, this is not my father." Yeah, he got really mad about that. But anyway, so back to kind of the 80s and stranger danger. In the previous decades, there had been like high-profile crimes, specifically Charles Manson, the Manson
yes.
family, that kind of underscored the ritualistic cultic crimes.
Yes.
And then in the 60s, you had Anton LaVey wrote the Satanic Bible.
Yes.
And founded the Church of Satan.
Satan.
And then you had like movies like The Exorcist and
yeah.
Rosemary's Baby. So all of these things had kind of primed society to already be afraid of cults
yes.
and Satanism. So then in the 80s, particularly, you had, you know, the concern about the corruption of youth and godless teenagers and the music they listen to and the media they consume.
Yes.
And so satanic influences really allowed parents to place the blame and responsibility first on sources outside of the family.
Right.
But especially on Satan worshipers
yes.
committed to converting their children.
Yeah, so after the kids.
Yeah, they're trying to corrupt the kids. So if my kid is acting weird or having problems, like we are the parents, we're not responsible, but it's the devil.
Yeah.
I'm laughing
during mm-hmm. you describing this because I was accused of being a devil worshiper mm-hmm. several times as a child.
Yeah, and I mean,
continue.
That, yeah, you know, like kind of this amorphous
yeah.
blame on Satan worshipers and devil worshipers, but
right.
it's kind of like the outsider kids that often get
exactly.
the full force of the
yeah.
the blame here. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But, you know, you had a number of figures associated with the religious right who kind of came out and said that they were like Satanists when they were growing up and they had been converted. And they
yes.
told these like graphic, lurid details about, you know, ritual sacrifice and satanic rituals. And ultimately, many of them were exposed as frauds and just I totally made all of this up.
Right.
But one particular example of satanic panic and kind of how absurd it was, and I remember this, was the Procter & Gamble.
I did not remember this one. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I grew up in church and
that's right, like, that's right.
Christian school,
yes.
so I saw this several times. But anyway, Procter & Gamble, the big company, they've got all kinds of subsidiaries, but particularly I think about like the Johnson & Johnson baby soap was what we used to use as kids all the time. But one particular moral crusader, which is the term for kind of the individuals who spearhead a moral panic, his name was Jim Peters, and he was involved in like anti-rock and roll crusades. So
yeah.
before this, he would hold like these burnings where people would bring their like heavy metal records and burn
yes.
them and set them
okay.
on fire.
Instead of books, records.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rock and roll, heavy metal, it's the devil's music. But anyway, he took issue with a company logo of Procter & Gamble, which is like a circle in a man's face on the side of it, bearded man, like the man in the moon looking
yeah.
at 13 stars. And so he accused this of being some kind of like coded, cryptic, pagan, devil-worshipping symbol. And he said like the man's hair and beard look like devil horns. And then
okay.
the organization of the stars depicted 666 in different ways.
I mean, that's a stretch, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the picture, it's
yeah.
not
doesn't look anything
it's
like that.
Totally like reading into it. And I mean, he even said like the beard curls, there was like some beard curls and they were supposed to be a 666. But anyway, that logo was trademarked in 1851 and the Man in the Moon was a popular logo at the time. So like, you know, over 100+ years before this guy saying, you know, this is Satan worshiping symbols. But there were like leaflets and chain letters. This was obviously before the internet.
Okay, so
I've seen one.
Can you explain a chain letter? Because I feel like there's a lot of listeners who would not know what a chain letter is.
Well, just imagine like the spam social media posts or emails before that. But like it comes in your mailbox on paper.
Okay.
showing our age here.
Yeah.
But like these, and I can't remember exactly where, but I've seen this paper before because I definitely remember like a list of all of the soap products. I mean, it was like a huge list, like do not buy these things.
Oh my gosh.
But basically saying that the company executives went on the Donahue show. Sometimes it's Sally Jesse, but went on the show and claimed like, yes, we are Satan worshipers. And yes, we donate our profit to the Satanic Church.
Okay.
And then like brazenly made this claim, like there are not enough Christians in this country to stop us,
gotcha.
Which again should be kind of a cue. We talked before about with like conspiracy theories, how that like this inflammatory rhetoric is supposed to excite emotion and resentment.
Right.
But anyway,
that
never happened. It's not
surprise.
True. Yeah. In every different flyer kind of gave a different date of when this show happened and what show it was. But anyway, like just all of this was totally made up. And in 2007, eventually Procter & Gamble won a $20 million lawsuit against Amway, which was a publication distributor that produced a lot of these documents.
I had no idea they did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. Like I said, I remember seeing one of these like, and thinking like, oh my God, we can't use this baby shampoo anymore because they're devil worshipers.
From the devil.
Yeah. But other ways that satanic panic manifested itself in kind of the 80s and 90s, Ouija boards.
Yes, we used these.
You played with the Ouija board?
Probably why I was called a devil worshiper. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we tried to contact spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've never done a Ouija board.
You haven't?
I do believe in the devil. and this would be like a little bit too close. Obviously, we're talking about satanic panic, social constructions, and all that stuff. But like,
Ouija board would be. Yeah, people are moving them with their fingers. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
could you tell?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Mm, well, Dungeons and Dragons. There was a big fear about like the RPG game Dungeons and Dragons,
which has made a comeback. And I had friends who played it. I never played it, but I have friends now who actually play it still.
My cousin.
Yeah.
I don't ever remember her playing it, but she had the game and it was like on the top shelf in the closet. And I remember somebody in my family being like, don't even go back in that room with that game. There are demons attached to it and they'll get on you. Like,
oh, God.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Heavy metal music. Obviously, we talked about record burnings before.
Yes.
But I remember, you know, like all kinds of talk about like if you played the records backward.
Yeah, I remember this.
Like the AC/DC particularly was a big one.
Oh, okay.
I remember people saying like that really stands for after Christ, demons come.
Oh, okay.
If you played their records backward, it would give, you could hear the implicit message that like the records are trying to brainwash you for Satan.
Wow.
I remember hearing people talk about like the friend of a friend.
Yes.
They found satanic churches in the woods and like they walked in and the pews were on the ceiling and there was a cross upside down.
I did hear some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then another one was like animal mutilations,
right.
Pet disappearances, child abductions. Every time somebody's pet went missing, it was like they've been sacrificed to the devil,
even if they didn't find the body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, the animal mutilations, those are things that like you find the carcass and a lot of times we think like, well, it's UFOs. You've heard like UFOs and crop circles and animal mutilations.
Yes.
And another big explanation for that is they've been sacrificed to the devil. But anyway, the notion of like animal and human sacrifice as a major component of a satanic ritual really fueled big time panic.
Right.
So remember the idea of the folk devil we talked about, like, you know, satanic cults, the devil, literally the devil as the folk devil here. But like we said before, oftentimes the blame gets put on the loners, the outsiders, the kids who look different, who dress different, who acted different.
Yes.
And that was definitely the case with the West Memphis Three.
Right.
The case. And I've never seen a documentary on this and I'm not super familiar with this case. But
it was really good. It's one of those first kind of like true crime docs that got a lot of attention.
Yeah, but essentially two young boys were killed in a pretty brutal fashion, and that led to speculation because of, you know, satanic panic that the occult was involved.
Yes.
And, you know, three older boys were eventually accused and suspected, primarily because the probation officer of, like, the guy who got accused of being the ringleader suspected that this guy listened to hardcore music and he was into witchcraft.
Yeah.
One of the boys who was not associated with the other two was, like, convinced by his babysitter who somehow got involved in the case, and she was, like, telling him about witchcraft and stuff. Anyway, he confessed, but ultimately his confession was inconsistent with the facts, and he recanted, and he would not testify.
Yeah.
But there were experts that were testifying at the trial that the boys' music collection and their clothing were indicative of satanic activity.
Yes.
And they were all three convicted, and one of them was sentenced to death.
Right.
And there was other evidence that, you know, other people were involved.
Yeah,
that the
stepdad
police ignored.
Of one of the victims.
Yeah, I don't know the full details here.
Yeah, stepdad of one of the victims.
But it's pretty clear that the boys were just scapegoats and not involved at all. And eventually, they were allowed to enter an Alford plea, which revisit our plea bargaining episode if you want to know what that is.
Yes.
And they were released with time served, but the case is still unsolved.
Yeah, and this also connects to our true crime episode because there were several documentaries made about the case that helped publicize the injustice. Celebrities got involved, and it actually helped get them released from prison. So the one who confessed actually did not want to take the Alford plea, but the fact that one of them was going to be executed, that's what made them all decide to do it. It was to save Damon Eccles, his life. So this is an example of how satanic panic can lead to scapegoating and result in people being prosecuted, imprisoned, potentially executed. One of the most well-known associated events with the satanic panic was the daycare sexual abuse hysteria, of which the McMartin preschool trial is probably the most famous. So in the 1980s, the McMartin family, who ran the daycare, and their employees were charged with hundreds of acts of sexual abuse against children in their care initiated by one parent, who was later found out to be paranoid schizophrenic. This parent made a claim, but then investigators sent this letter around notifying other parents. So you get this letter saying this happened, and so as a parent, of course you're going to be concerned.
Yeah, and like, you know, I talked about kind of like the social context earlier.
Yeah.
In addition, you know, to this kind of major manifestation, daycare, satanic abuse, you kind of had the social context in the 80s of mothers entering the workforce to a large degree for the first time, leaving their kids in daycares, in strangers, anxiety about that. Natural. Concerned with the social anxiety about satanic ritual abuse. Now you've got satanic ritual abuse in daycares across the country.
So it escalated because the children were interviewed by social workers who used investigative techniques that are now known to produce false confessions, especially with children. They asked leading and suggestive questions, offered rewards, asked repetitive questions when they didn't get the answer that they were looking for. They used anatomically correct dolls. This led to disclosures of alleged satanic ritual abuse, or SRA, that included things like that weren't possible, like flying witches, animal torture and sacrifice, child sexual abuse material, secret tunnels where they were taken, and of course, eating babies.
So I used to teach a social deviance class a long, long time ago, and I taught moral panics, and you know, I've taught about this before, and I've read some of these transcripts of interviews with kids. And I am not even exaggerating or distorting, but it would be things like the police would be like, okay, tell me about how your teacher made you drink blood in the sewers and you can have this popsicle. Or you can have this sucker if you tell me about how you went on a hot balloon ride and, you know, had to have sex with your teachers and you can have this sucker. So it was like, you know, kids were saying things like hot air balloon rides. They were going into the sewers with their class. They were drinking blood out of piano benches. I mean, it was
The detail was crazy. The case total lasted 7 years and became one of the longest and most expensive trials in American history, topping out at like $15 million. It resulted in no convictions. All charges were dropped in 1990 because there was absolutely no evidence that any of this had ever happened. Jurors speaking after noted that the children were never allowed to say what happened to them in their own words. They were being coached and coaxed the whole time.
Like I said, that, like, the police were And the parents were feeding them these stories and yes. offering them rewards if they agreed to this. So it was like, yeah, you're 5 years old, you're 3 years old. Like, here's a popsicle. I love popsicles. Yeah, I'll agree to that. If you
I drink blood. Give me a popsicle.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this was just mm-hmm. one of hundreds of alleged cases of SRA in schools in the country, but the panic did spread to other countries as well. So in terms of how it started, it's important to highlight that it began with one dude trying to make a career out of being an expert in satanic ritual abuse, or ritual abuse, as he coined the term. Michelle remembers a now discredited autobiography co-written by Canadian psychiatrist Lawrence Pazder and his patient and future wife, Michelle Smith. It was published in 1980, and it's about where she remembers SRA during this debunked practice mm-hmm. of recovered memory therapy.
Sus.
The book was hugely popular. It launched his career as an expert, led to a very lucrative book deal for both of them. They were consulting around the country, lecturing, training social workers, and law enforcement. And the book was used as evidence in the McMartin preschool trial. So,
yeah, I mean, it's kind of like that similar pattern, like all of these people who put this forth, either like they made it up or, you know, under hypnosis or...
Yeah, I was just talking to students yesterday about Sybil and how that also, there was a book called Sybil Exposed. It was kind of the same thing, you know, where you have this one person who's a careerist who's just trying to make a career out of being an expert in this one thing. And it led to all this. So Pazder did try to walk it back a little bit once it was found that all of the allegations were false, but the damage was done. Yeah,
the
he was like, well, it doesn't mean, you know, like all of these things really happened, but I believe she experienced this, right? So. But he couldn't have done it by himself, you know. It was the way that the panic spread, where you had this sort of collusion between psychotherapists, law enforcement, religious fundamentalists, and others assisting in spreading the panic. But to be clear, child sexual abuse does happen. So it makes sense that everyone would want to take it as seriously as possible, but they ended up causing so much massive harm. And also what they did was made invisible the type of abuse of children that's most likely in the family unit or by someone who's close to the family. So, you know, sort of the last thing here is that this one issue with this is it's the far right conspiracy movement we talked about in a previous episode, QAnon, has adopted many of these satanic panic tropes. But rather than having SRA in daycare centers, they're claiming it's liberal Hollywood actors, Democratic politicians, and other government officials are Satanists abusing children.
Yeah, so satanic panic has reared its ugly horned head again in a different, slightly different manifestation.
It has. It has.
Well, that's satanic panic. You got anything else?
I do not.
All right. Well, then that means it is time for our spin in just a minute. So, Tommy, what's your spin?
If you want to know what's wrong with all of us adults who grew up in the 80s, being fed a steady diet of stranger danger panic in the form of devil-worshipping sex cults that eat babies and ritualized sacrifices to Satan might have something to do with it.
Maybe. Could be. Could be. Good point.
Ben, what's your spin?
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a panic to start. So don't panic about the satanic, but you've got to kiss an angel good morning and love her like the devil when you get back home. So, salacious, inflammatory stories that confirm your own beliefs and worldview and sound too good to be true often are. Use good media literacy and let her know you think about her when you're gone. Kiss an angel good morning and love her like the devil when you get back home.
We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center, a nonprofit which relies on support from generous donors like yourselves. If you would like to support our educational programming, click on the link in our show notes to provide a modest donation.